Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show, everybody. We're counting. We're looking ahead to 2010 at the movies tonight. It's November, but you know, it feels right. Might as well.
Yeah, it does feel right. I mean, have we already discounted the rest of the year for some reason? And I don't actually. I think the rest of the year is very promising.
I do too.
I mean, I really. I'll be honest.
Go ahead.
We have a very special show tonight because we have Chris on the line. So I think we need to really make that fact known right now.
Oh, well, don't worry. I'll make it known.
Yeah, I know you're going to make it known. I mean, hey, and you know what? We don't need Roland to call in because we have you. So, you know.
Oh, God.
Hey, excuse me. I'm very phlegmy tonight for some reason.
Yeah, what's up with that, man?
I have no idea. Anyway, because the weather's changed. Oh, it's beautiful. It's nice, cool. Anyway, our listeners don't care about that. I needed you guys' take on this because we haven't discussed it yet. The big news that came out last week in the movie world was the announcement of the Oscar hosts. There was lots of speculation who would host, and actually the Vegas bet makers, they bet on who will win and all that kind of stuff, but they even have bet making regarding the host, who will host, and their favorite was Billy Crystal. But now we know that it's going to be a co-host situation, which hasn't happened in a while, and the co-hosts will be Steve Martin and Alec Baldwin, and I want to know what you guys feel about that. Chris, how about you, man?
I think it's a good idea. I like both of them. And also, the timing is interesting, too, because, of course, they will have had a movie that they're in together have come out by that time, that It's Complicated movie, which I think looks very good. I doubt it will still be in theaters at that time, but it'll be interesting. Like, what if the movie's a huge bomb, you know? Like, what if they're both coming off this huge bomb and they're doing this show together? That'll make for an interesting show. But regardless of how that movie does, I think they're both obviously extremely talented, not only as actors, but as, improvisational artists. I think that both of them, you know, of course, I think they're tied for having hosted the Saturday Night Live the most times, the two of them, and they're both very good at it. So I think they're going to be fantastic. I mean, it would be great with either one of them. With both of them, I'm sure it'll be a really interesting dynamic. I don't think they've ever been on screen together before that I can remember.
Right.
But I would be willing to wager that they have a really great chemistry. They're both incredible comedians, and I think it's great. Like, you know, there's always a threat of Whoopi Goldberg in the air, and any time we avoid
quite a wretched threat,
right? Anytime we avoid that abortion, then I feel like
I would rather
wins.
See Monique host it.
I would rather see
Shirley from What's Happening host it, for that matter.
So, Jerry, you didn't get Shirley, but are you happy with the two that you got?
This is probably the boldest decision since David Letterman, and it's the best decision since David Letterman, to be quite honest. And while that was a resounding failure, but God knows David Letterman milked it for the best top 10 list ever in his career, this is the best decision because this is a Nancy Meyers film, and I think one of her best films is Something's Gotta Give. And I think this, It's Complicated, come on, Streep, Baldwin, Martin, you can't ask for a better mainstream comedy.
Come on, though?
You really
That's her strength. Her strength is in casting.
Yeah,
she always has great casts.
She has great casts, but it doesn't always work. But this is going to be something that's going to appeal to boomers and to youngsters and to senior citizens. They're going to eat this shit up. So, of course, it's a brilliant thing for the Oscars because Billy Crystal, No, I'm sorry. That's not going to work in 2010. It's just not going to work. It's not, you know, this is brilliant because you got Alec Baldwin coming off 30 Rock where he's stealing the show every week, and Steve Martin, who is very funny when given the right material. I mean, this is just genius. This is so much better than what we were talking about throughout the year since the last show. You really got to say, my God, this could be the first telecast in 20 years that's good.
Yeah, I'm curious how it played out, because obviously they go around looking for hosts, and even if they said, okay, we want to do a co-host thing this year, it strikes me as odd that they would somehow link those two up, you know what I mean? It would be more obvious for them to go, oh, well, we're going to go with, you know, somebody like Steve Martin and Billy Crystal, you know, two comedians, or Robin Williams and Billy Crystal, people who have a rapport, they've done the comic relief thing together, you know.
If Robin Williams was allowed to snort coke beforehand, I'm all for it.
Right. Well, me too.
Okay, so I'm just saying anything to make the show, because, dude, that's 3.5-4 hours, regardless of however they try to...
Well, if Robin Williams hosted it, it would be 5 hours. And that's my thing against Robin Williams hosting it.
Right.
Are you afraid that he'd do, like, a tribute to his own career in the first, like, you know, Moscow to the Hudson and The Survivors and World According to Garp?
No, those are actually decent movies.
I love those movies. That's awesome.
The problem with Rob Williams is that he just doesn't shut up.
Well, you know, that's what happens when you never mind.
Okay. Before we get into 2010 releases, we've seen a couple of movies. I caught up on some old movies.
I actually want to talk about the movies you saw more than anything else.
Oh.
You don't mind. I know. Because I saw a lot of stuff. I'm not ready to talk about it. I saw The Proposal on DVD, and we'll leave it at that. I saw the Obama documentary. I was reliving the recent past. So, let's talk about what you saw, because you saw two very interesting films that are worth discussing.
Well, it's interesting, because I posted it on our Facebook page.
Yeah, I don't have ESP, baby. That's why I saw it on the Facebook page. I don't have.
I'm going to tell you. Tell you why I mentioned this, because the first response was, Jamie, you're forbidden from ever giving your opinion on movies again.
Well, what door said that?
I don't know. Someone with Liv Ullmann in their profile pic. So I mean,
really?
he's smart enough about movies. But I watched State of Play for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Caught up on that, and I thought it was fantastic. And it felt like a discovery because it wasn't a movie that I'd heard spoken about a lot. It wasn't really looked... the reviews were great for it, by and large, but the press on it was kind of light. You know, there wasn't a big word on it, you know. Kind of flew under the radar. So it felt like a discovery to me, and I was excited by it. I was excited by the performances. I was excited the fact that it was about several things, and it was about them very well.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that it's based on a miniseries, a British miniseries, right?
Yeah, it is based on a British miniseries, and that's where I think the reason that we did not hear about this a lot is because there was a bias for people who had seen the British miniseries, which I understand. But this is a recent British miniseries, only from a couple of years ago. And so this was always going to be held in a lower regard than its source material, which I can understand if the series was from 20 or 30 years ago.
Well, and I don't necessarily like that, because first of all, a two-hour movie is not going to carry the weight and the depth and the minutia of a spread out miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
So they're two different beasts.
Yeah, they are.
This is an exemplary Hollywood movie in the fashion of An All the President's Men. I mean, it's not An All the President's Men.
No, it's not. It's good.
But it kind of is for a new age, because it talks about the dying newspaper business. It talks about the snobbery over the online segment of it amongst the old school.
Russell Crowe is very good in this film.
He's fantastic in it. Yeah. Okay. What else did I see? I saw I Love You, Man. I thought that was fine.
That's a very good movie. Very underrated movie.
See, I saw Whatever Works. And I liked it very much.
Well, why did you? I'm curious. Why did you like it?
Because it's one of those. It's not. It's a Woody Allen movie, kind of in low key. in a minor key. And I dig those Woody Allen movies. I mean, not as low key as something like In Anything Else, but you know, it's not a Hannah and her sisters. It's not dealing with, you know, God.
No, of course not. It's got Larry David. It's not going to be Hannah and her sisters. It's not.
But at the same time, I thought it was very thoughtful, and I thought it was one of his more positive movies, actually.
God, Larry David and positive normally don't go in the same sentence together. You're gonna be remembered for that.
But I, Chris, don't you agree? I think it was a positive note that it ended on.
No, I didn't see the movie. I haven't seen it.
Oh, okay. That's right. That's right.
I thought Mr. Clarkson was good, and when she's not in the movie, it suffers. But I just Larry David and Woody Allen. I mean, it's like one and the same. It's scary. It's like the Nebbish in Overload. Like the Nebbish cubed, almost. And
yeah, but the one thing about Larry David as Woody Allen, he doesn't have to play Woody Allen.
He is Woody Allen.
Yeah,
he's Woody
yeah.
Allen. He's every... Oh, God, he's like Philip Roth and Woody Allen combined in some awful Auschwitz experiment gone wrong. I mean...
I thought it was very thoughtful, and by the end of it, I mean, it deals with things that Woody Allen's always talked about. He believes... There is no God. There is no eternity.
Right.
There's ugliness and awfulness in the world, but you have to pick up anything that brings you joy in life. You know, that's what he means by whatever works. And I think
no, I understand that. If I saw this movie when it was originally written in the 70s, I would have said this film is perfect. And it's really interesting because you obviously see from this script, you see shades of Hannah and his sisters. You see a lot of that in here. You see a lot of those motifs that are brought out in later films. But I got to tell you, if I saw it in the 70s, it's awesome. I have to say, watching it, and I was just like, this film is incredibly dated. I don't mean that in the worst way, but it's just like, oh God, how much Larry David can I take in one lifetime? And I feel like I'm just getting it, you know, from all sides lately.
Yeah, you don't dig Larry David as much as
I do. Oh, I like Larry David, but I live with it for 39 years. I don't need to see it on HBO every Sunday night.
Yeah, that's why you don't like it as much as I do.
Yeah, no, but it's an honest opinion. I'm not jumping on the media elite bandwagon here. I'm being very honest about it. I'm not trying to anyone to
Unfaithful. I've watched a few old movies. I bought a bunch of them. Unfaithful is one of them that I watched three times yesterday because I decided, look, I've seen this movie enough. Let me study it. So I watched it through three times, once without commentary and the other two times with the two commentaries.
Oh, what's the commentary like on that?
I mean, Adrian Lyne is very good with his commentaries. The stars are okay, which was Diane Lane and Olivier Martinez.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a stunning movie. I think it's probably definitely one of his top movies, Adrian Lyne, and one of the best movies of this decade. In that it's a standard, you could see it done very standard. I mean, the affair and the murder and all that kind of stuff, it's been done a million times.
Mm-hmm, true.
But he makes it so specific to character and so emotionally honest. And Richard Gere has never been better. I never reacted to Richard Gere until I saw him in Unfaithful. I thought, man, that is a powerhouse performance. And, of course, Diane Lane. Chris,
well,
you have any thoughts about what we're talking about?
Hey, Chris Roy, you gotta join in here, baby, because you know that's why people are listening to the show to hear you.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Man.
No, I love Unfaithful. It's been a little while since I've seen it, but I do own it. I've seen it a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's interesting. I always find it interesting when if you look at the story of Fatal Attraction and then Unfaithful. They're very similar. Like, yeah, there's differences, but basically, you know, you're talking about adultery and in a marriage, and you know, things go wrong. If you were to sum those two stories up in one sentence, the two sentences would be very similar. I always think it's really really interesting when a director can take two such similar projects like that and make them such radically different movies to sit through.
Yeah.
And that's the case here. Like it's almost like it's like the inverse of Fatal Attraction or something
mm-hmm.
like that.
And
I agree that Richard Gere has never been better before or since, and I don't know if he ever will be quite that good again. And yeah, it's also just a really sexy movie. And it's kind of objective. It doesn't really you're left to make your own opinions about what's going on. Everybody in the movie is flawed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes it interesting. It's not like, oh, Richard Gere's just this he's just so perfect and he handles it perfectly. He certainly does not handle it perfectly.
That's putting it
quite the opposite.
And, you know, there's such an emotional investment in these characters. One of my favorite moments in the movie is when they both know. I mean, he knows that she's had an affair. She knows that he's killed him. And there's a scene where he's playing piano with his son, and mm-hmm. she's doing craft stuff at the table. And it's this, you know, beautiful piano thing, and he's holding his son, and they hear sirens in the outside, and they both look at each other, and you feel that anxiety for them and mm-hmm. with them. It's a really well done, deep kind of movie. It treats that subject matter and those themes a lot deeper than most people are willing to go. So that's basically been my movie watching weekend highlights anyway.
If we can focus on Richard Gere just for a couple seconds, I also liked him in that year in Chicago. Because before Unfaithful, I must say I was not the biggest Richard Gere fan. I liked him in The Hunting Party and I liked him in The Hoax. So it seems like Unfaithful is his turning point in his career for us.
I think so too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think I did like him in Chicago, but I liked Chicago. I know, and I know many people don't, so they probably wouldn't see Richard Gere, his worth in it, if they don't like mm-hmm. the movie to begin with.
Right, true. And I was part of that camp before this film, but that I remember going to see it with my mom, and I was like, yeah, this is actually a really good film.
Mm-hmm. Okay, should we talk about 2010, or is there something else on your mind, Chris?
No, I think talk about 2010. I don't know. I mean, I think it's good that we're going to talk about it because it gives us a jump, you know, on everyone else, but yeah.
Chris, did you have something you wanted to talk about before we hop into 2010?
No, 2010 movies sounds like an interesting conversation. Let's do it.
Should we?
All right. So Peter Himes directed this movie.
Yeah, I know. Should we start talking about 2010 with Liv Schreiber first, though? I would like to mind.
Okay, let's start with, we got a lot of movies, and some of them are surprising to me, exciting collaborations that thrill me more than anything else about some of these titles. And then we have oddities like Dahmer versus Gacy that's actually on the release schedule. Which,
when is that coming out?
I don't think it has an exact date, so it's
that
listed.
That sounds like a straight-to-video release.
Yeah, it's one of those. So it's listed as December 31st. But I think it brings up a topic that's worth talking about a little later on the show.
Okay.
So I have, to start out with, I have January 15th, the big release. And we're not going to cover all of them, just the ones that are worthy of some kind of conversation. And it's the Hughes Brothers' newest movie, which is the Book of is it Eli or Ellie?
Book of Eli, I mean, you couldn't ask for a better combination. Denzel Washington being directed by the Hughes Brothers, come on. And then Gary Oldman and Mila Kunis, come on, this is just awesome.
Well, the Hughes Brothers excites me, and the other aspect of it that excites me is is Gary Oldman.
Yeah, I mean...
Any time we get a Gary Oldman movie amongst worthy collaborators, it's reason for excitement.
Oh, it is.
You have a read on this movie, Chris?
It's a little early. I'm excited about the exact same thing.
It's a little early. This is January. We're going to go all the way to December.
What's up, man?
No. I mean, it's a little bit too early as far as what I've seen from the movie. It's a little too early for me to make a judgment on the movie.
Right.
Not too early in the show. I am always excited about Denzel Washington, although his track record lately is not so great. And likewise, for Gary Oldman, to be perfectly honest, you know, there was a time when, you know, I would be foaming at the mouth to get to a Gary Oldman movie. But, you know, Gary Oldman is not what he used to be. Not that he's any less of an actor. It's just that he doesn't take those kind of parts anymore. Usually, I'm hoping this is different. He just doesn't usually take those parts where he is as showy as he was earlier in his career.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the Hughes Brothers go, I feel like the Hughes Brothers have gotten a lot of miles on not a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
And not only not a lot of work, but not the greatest work. In fact, I think what was the last thing we saw from them, it was probably From Hell, wasn't it?
Yeah, with Johnny Depp, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which was, you know, if I'm being kind, I'd call it a mixed bag, you know. Like, it wasn't a classic. So I do think that they're talented, and I hope that this is an interesting movie. But I just feel like we haven't seen it. I've only seen the one preview of it But, you know, who the hell knows? Denzel Washington being a badass is always a good bet. You know,
yeah,
like any
like Training
anytime.
Day and American Gangster.
Right, right.
They're clearly looking for a hit here,
yeah.
Hughes Brothers. I mean, this is packaged like a hit. And watching Gary Oldman in this newest trailer, I'm very excited about it.
Gentlemen, in my hand I hold a book called Kim Newman's Apocalypse Movies, which is about end-of-the-world cinema. I'm sort of like the go-to guy on these kind of movies, if you know what I mean. I think this has the potential to be really good. I don't know if it's going to be like The Road Warrior, but I think it's really important to actually talk about that this movie comes out 2 months after The Road, which, let's be very honest, as much as I'm looking forward to it, it's not going to really turn a lot of heads or lift a lot of skirts. It's just the Weinsteins have really buried this film. Let's release it the day before Thanksgiving. That's when I always release an apocalypse movie, before a family holiday. Yeah, that's what we all want to go see. We want to see our skin melt when we're having turkey. But,
it's going to work. It's going to work in 2012's case.
It is going to work in 2012's case, but that's spectacle. It's spectacle for the sake of spectacle.
Yeah.
You know, when you go see a movie like 2012, you know what you're getting. You're getting the end of the world and someone who really hates the White House a lot.
Speaking of which, I saw a new trailer when I saw This Is It. Saw a new trailer for 2012. And it had to have been the worst, most laughable trailer I've ever seen in my life.
Is it the long one that shows you Los Angeles being destroyed?
No, yeah, that's eye candy. I can enjoy that. This one was like, it was set entirely to Adam Lambert's song that he wrote for it, which is a love song. And it was the most ridiculous-looking thing I've ever seen. It made that movie incredibly laughable. Even the stupid people that would be excited about seeing that movie would laugh at this trailer.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of 2012. I mean, you know, there are people who – there's so many theories about that, the date of that year anyways, you know. I don't know. Can we talk about something else, please?
Yes. Speaking of This Is It, last week's mystery movie song of the show was Prince Housequake from the concert movie Sign of the Times, which, speaking of which, is a concert movie that I'd see in a second over This Is It. All right, so the next big movie, The Lovely Bones, goes wide on January 15th as well.
Mm-hmm.
So for those that don't live in big cities, the two big cities, New York and L.A., that's your chance to see Peter Jackson's Lovely Bones as well. Mm-hmm. January 22nd, the week after, it brings an interesting movie, and this man has two movies that interest me next year. But the first one is called Extraordinary Measures, and it opens January 22nd. It's a Harrison Ford movie. It's a drama on the efforts of two parents to find a researcher that might find a cure for their two children's rare genetic disorder. Sounds like Lorenzo's Oil, but instead of Nick Nolte, you have Brendan Fraser. I forget who the wife is in this movie.
Carrie Russell.
And then Harrison Ford as the researcher. So I don't know if it spells big box office, but it could spell a good movie.
Yeah, no, I think you're right there. It does spell a good movie. It has potential, and it would be nice to see Harrison Ford in something good. You know,
Have we lost faith, Chris, in Harrison Ford yet?
Yes.
Chris, that? You're asking Chris that? I mean,
yes, because I want to hear him talk.
No, but I mean, Chris, you know, wrote this guy off long ago.
No, he didn't.
Well, I haven't written him off, but I have lost faith in him. I mean, come on, like, what was the last good Harrison Ford movie? Seriously.
The Fugitive.
Yeah, well, I would say it would be K-19, The Widowmaker, but that's a blip, and if you go back further than that, it probably is The Fugitive. I mean, it's been a really long time. The guy is not making good movies. Like, even if you, like, take Crystal Skull and throw it in the garbage can, which is where it belongs, and look at the stuff that came before it. I'm talking about stuff like, you know, 6 Days, 7 Nights.
Oh, man,
and,
wretched. Yeah.
You know, Hollywood Homicide and all this bullshit. Like, he's been making bullshit for a long time.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what he's doing. I don't know what you know, getting in Clarissa Flockhart's panties has done for him, but it's obviously really ruined his choices, his choice-making ability. So,
it's
not
you, that's for sure.
It just makes me, like when you look at a movie like Witness or The Mosquito Coast or even The Fugitive, like, he used to be making movies that were you know, had a little ball, some balls to them, you know, at least, or had something interesting to say. He hasn't made a movie that had something to say in, you know, 15 years. It's been a really long time. So I think if you haven't lost faith in Harrison Ford, then I think you're a goddamn fool, personally. I don't know why anyone would be frothing, you know, to go see a new Harrison Ford movie. You have no excuse. You know, if I, like, punch you in the face every day, and then I wait, you, the next day I come up to you, and you, like, stick out your hand like I'm gonna shake your hand, you'd be a fool, because I'm going to punch you in the face.
You know what I'd rather do? I'd rather snort cocaine off Stephanie Meyer's ass than go see a Harrison Ford movie, to be quite honest with you.
Well, that goes without saying.
Yeah.
Well, that's an analogy we can all live with.
It is.
Also on January 22nd, speaking of losing faith in someone, I think this man has a lot of charisma, and he blew it a long time ago, too. And I can also say that because I've tried to get him on the show, and he won't do it. The Rock, Dwayne Johnson.
Oh, that movie looks wretched.
Tooth Fairy.
Oh, my God, dude, that looks fucking... makes the Game Plan look like Citizen fucking Kane. I mean, come on.
What is he doing? I mean, I'm not opposed to... He's like playing an Eddie Murphy at the beginning of his career rather than the end of it.
He shouldn't be doing this. He should be doing more like action and dramatic stuff. I mean, you know, I know people don't like Southland Tales, but I want to see him do more parts like Boxer Santoris than the fucking Tooth Fairy.
I take another Walking Tall over the Tooth Fairy.
I take another Scorpion King over the Tooth Fairy.
These movies you're citing were not very good. Like, come on. He's doing an Eddie Murphy thing, but he's doing it at the beginning of his career instead of the end of his career. No, it is the end of his career. He's doing it at the end of his career. He just got to it a lot quicker than Eddie Murphy.
Thank you for that retrospect. Thank you.
Anyway, that comes out on the 22nd, too. What, Jerry?
Can we stop talking about the Tooth Fairy?
Yeah, we're going to go to January 29th. Which is probably all eyes will be on this release because it's the first release since Mel Gibson went shit crazy. Edge of Darkness, will this be a comeback? I mean, Mel Gibson hasn't really had any flops. His last movie was one of the biggest grossers of all time, so what is he coming back from? I guess Public Scandal. So what do we think of this one?
I think it's like sort of in the vein of Taken, if you will. But I think it's a smart move. I think it's a good way to reintroduce him as an actor to the movie-going audiences. I think
another adaptation of a British miniseries, right?
Well, there you go. I mean, that's true. And it's he's in good hands. He's got Martin Campbell. You could be in worse hands. I mean, you could be in never mind. But
he's a solid action director. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is I really think this is a smart move on his part, and it's a good trailer. And it's very interesting because he's playing an Irish cop, and remember originally he was offered a Departed, the Jack Nicholson part in the Departed.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is a smart move.
And Martin Campbell is a good, strong action director,
and
best of all, directing Mel Gibson, he's not a Jew, so that's good news.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't have to worry about, like, you know, never mind, I'm not going to go there. But
Chris, are you looking forward to another Mel Gibson performance?
Yeah, I am. I like Mel Gibson. And, you know, even stuff like Signs, which I don't think is a great movie, I like Mel Gibson in it. Stuff like Ransom, not a good movie, but Mel Gibson's very good in it. So I'm interested in this, and I do think it's a smart move on his part because it'll probably be a good movie because of the story and the script and the director and the cast that's involved. You know, Ray Winstone's a good actor. And Danny Houston, yes. And I just don't think too many people are going to go see it. I think it's going to have, a life a lot like State of Play, you know, probably get pretty good reviews, but this kind of movie, like, doesn't really draw people to the theater anymore, and I don't think you can compare it to Taken, because Taken was just, you know, a balls-out action, ridiculous action movie. And this is not about some ex-mercenary,
No, but they're trying to capture, if you watch the trailer, I do think they're trying to go for that vibe.
Yeah, you're right, they are, but I don't think it's that kind of movie, and the reason Taken The reason Taken took off the way it did was because of word of mouth. People went and saw it and came back and said, it's an hour and 40 minutes of balls-out action, and I don't think that this movie is an hour and 40 minutes of balls-out action. I think it's going to have a lot more story and a lot more thought behind it, and that's not going to get that kind of word of mouth, I don't think.
I think the reason why Taken succeeded, and you're right, it was the word of mouth, because nobody expected Taken to do
it. It was out of nowhere.
But Taken had already...
But it was the word of mouth... It was the word of mouth. concerning Liam Neeson playing a complete badass.
Yeah.
That was the crux of it. And I think we love to see Mel Gibson playing a complete badass, too.
We want
to
see him, you know, going ballistic on people.
Yeah. The next week, February 5th, now this is a big question mark, too. I mean, Jim Carrey is in a place. Christmas Carol did well this weekend. I would have preferred to have seen it live action.
Same here.
Yeah. But, and that's going to last for the holidays, I'm sure. It's going to make a ton of money. But Jim Carrey is in a place where he has had flops. And he's had flops a lot of times when he branches out.
Well, that's when he's best, when he branches out.
You're absolutely right. So now he's taking on his riskiest movie, which is I Love You, Philip Morris, that comes out February 5th, where he plays a man that gets arrested, I think, for a financial scheme or something. And he's a conservative guy, married and everything. He gets arrested, and then he starts a love affair with Ewan McGregor in prison. And the gay starts happening. They both get out, and they have this wildly liberal lifestyle. He's completely changed. And apparently, this movie goes way far.
Well, good for him.
Yeah. And so it's always – I'm sure I'm going to love the movie, and it's going to be hysterical. But what do you think audiences might – might they flock to something like this?
It's hard to say. If Jim Carrey's best work is the stuff that unfortunately the audiences have not flocked to, this does not sound like this ain't a crowd pleaser, but I want to see it.
Yeah,
this is not Bruce Almighty.
Oh yeah, that's right. He did that too. Okay, yeah, all right.
Yeah, it's not going to be. I just don't think people accept him in that kind of role at first. I mean, he's very good in certain roles like that, like Eternal Sunshine or even Number 23, which is not a good movie, but he can play a different kind of stuff. But people want Jim Carrey to be Jim Carrey, and he really has never had a successful movie where he was not playing rubber-faced Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
And even though he is sort of doing that in this movie, it's not Liar Liar, it's not Bruce Almighty, you know, it's about, you know, it's about, you know, dudes fucking in prison. So, like, that's not exactly, that doesn't exactly put the asses in the seats.
Hope they use that as a tagline. I will say this, though, and this goes back, this is actually kind of like where I'm at right now. You know, we always complain that the actors, oh, they play the same part over and over again, someone like Jim Carrey or something. And that's partially the moviegoer's fault. Because
yes.
We are typecasting these people, these very talented actors and actresses. We typecast them because we're voting with our wallet or our pocketbook or whatever. And when you do that, unfortunately, you're going to complain, but you're going to get more and more Liar Liars and less Eternal Sunshines. And we're the ones who lose in the end.
Yeah,
I agree 100%.
And that's true of all arts, all the arts.
Yeah, I mean, we do this. We're the ones causing the typecast in the short and long run.
The Wednesday after that, February 10th, is a big movie, The Wolfman.
I can't wait.
Which has had various people attached. The big thing when it started, Mark Romanek, who's a terrific stylist. And very dark. He was going the helmet, and then he backed out over creative differences. And the person that took his place, Joe Johnston, kind of made my heart sink a little bit. I mean, if this were the 80s, that's a cruel thing to say. But I don't equate Joe Johnston with making as dark a film as a Mark Romanek would have out of The Wolfman.
That's true.
But Benicio del Toro starring as the Wolfman, which is a perfect fit, I would think. Anthony Hopkins, how many of these old horror movie characters is he going to play?
He's having the time of his life. It's got a great cast. The four leads are perfect for this film. That's what I'm banking on. I'm not banking on Joe Johnson so much, but I think it's the casting that's superb in this film.
That's true, and from what I read, a lot of the pre-production was already in place. Extensive storyboards, extensive set designs. I mean, if you remember, Johnson took over, like, literally right before filming. I mean, it was
right.
They were just about to start filming. Mm-hmm. So I do think that a lot it will seem a little bit darker and a little bit edgier than any Joe Johnson movie you've ever seen, most likely.
Yeah.
Although Joe Johnson, you know, he's not Stephen Sommers. He's not totally
without
a couple good movies. He's made some decent movies, you know. Yeah, you know, like Rocketeer or Jumanji or whatever. He can make a solid movie.
Yeah.
I think this will be solid. I think this will be entertaining enough.
And it's written by Andrew Kevin Walker.
Yeah, I mean, come on, what more do you have? Come on, if you can get Andrew out in the game with a script, I'm happy. I mean, it's not going to be David Fincher directing it, but come on, I mean, I'll take what I can get from Walker.
Do you think that it's the wrong time to release The Wolfman?
What,
February 10th.
Why do you... Oh, because you Valentine's Day?
Yes.
No, I think it's perfect, because it is... you've got two of the... How should I say it? You've got these two incredible actors in the lead. You have Emily Blunt, who's riding the whirlwind right now, and you got Del Toro, who's been riding the whirlwind since The Usual Suspects.
Well, that speaks more to whether or not the quality of the movie would be good. I'm talking about, on a financial level, is it smart for them to release it during a big weekend for couples? That goes against a movie called Valentine's Day.
It does, but if you it depends, and this is where the marketing people have to be smart. Do you emphasize the love story in that, in some of the marketing?
Well, you can, but it's still going to be called The Wolfman.
It's going to have a tagline.
Okay,
an animal in the bedroom.
Jerry, stop talking over everybody.
I know, I'm sorry, I'm just trying to get my point across about the market. I think you can make this, you can emphasize that, and it will be fine. I actually think you have a chance. You don't have to worry about the stupid romantic comedy that's coming out. You could actually beat it.
Well, that's like, you know, I don't know that that'll make a difference.
It depends. It depends what people want to see.
Yeah. The Wolfman would be a couples. I mean, The Wolfman generally would be a couples movie anyway, because maybe horror movies couples go to that. I don't know.
Yeah, the couples do horror movies, but this is a different kind. This is really a highbrow horror movie in that sense. Really, you know, you're going back, you're doing Universal Monsters from the 30s, and, you know, that might actually appeal to a lot of people.
But Gary Marshall's Valentine's Day that comes out that Friday on the 12th, obviously it's capitalizing on the He's Not That Into You success. Is that going to be just as much of a success?
I would think so, yeah. If you look at the cast and you look at the timing of when it's released, like, I think that's a surefire hit if I've ever heard of
mm-hmm.
one. I have no doubt.
Gary Marshall could use it. I mean,
yeah, I mean,
and it's his kind of movie. If he has a kind of movie,
yeah,
I like.
But look at this
Common.
I love Nothing Common.
Yeah.
Look at this cast in Valentine's Day, and this is another lovers kind of ensemble. Julia Roberts, Jessica Biel, Anne Hathaway, Ashton Kutcher, Jessica Alba, Jennifer Gardner, Emma Roberts, Patrick Dempsey, Jamie Foxx, Topher Grace, Taylor Lautner, which more than anything will bring in the little girls.
Oh, yeah.
Bradley Cooper, Queen Latifah, Shirley MacLaine, George Lopez. Come on.
Yeah, that's a lot of people, man. I mean, you basically made sure that you've got every demographic covered.
This is like really top heavy. This movie, it's going to be chaos. But you're right. I think it's going to be. We're going to expect big things for that movie in terms of the number of people that will go see it. Now the 19th. Speaking of smart times to release a movie, apparently Paramount felt that this was the best time to release it instead of October when it should have been released. Martin Scorsese, Shutter Island, probably for all of us, I would think, the first must-see movie of 2010.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Well, actually, it was the must-see movie of 2009, so
yeah.
It rolls over into 2010. Although it does give me a little bit, I know that they did it for financial reasons, for marketing or whatever, but it does give me a little bit of pause, you know. Anytime a movie's delayed, we all know that is never good, or I should say rarely good. You know, there are instances, like Titanic probably being the most famous example of a movie that was delayed, and it looked a little shaky for a second, and then we all know how that worked out. So doesn't it sort of make you think, like, I mean, I know it's Scorsese, and he's on a hell of a run. Maybe I'm just a pessimist, and I'm waiting for it to be over, and I'm just waiting for the other shoe to drop, you know?
Right.
This was delayed not because of quality or a question about the film. The film is done, and nothing's going to be done to it in the interim before it comes out in February.
Right. That's what I'm saying. That's what they said, but, you know, Hollywood's full of liars, so...
well, they're not doing anything with it. Scorsese's done with it.
Yeah, I mean...
Well, again, full of liars. Like, we've heard things like that.
Yeah, I mean, the town is...
Are you calling Scorsese a liar?
No, we're not calling him a liar, but the Paramount people are... you know, this thing with the marketing and everything, they couldn't afford the marketing for an Oscar campaign this year. I don't know what to believe.
Mm-hmm. This is interesting, because there's Scorsese's been doing some interviews lately in connection to a couple of different things, but he's working on, like, a documentary on George Harrison and some other stuff, but apparently his next big movie, I thought it was going to be Silence, Daniel Day-Lewis. I guess it's not going to be, because he said in February he's going to be in L.A. doing marketing for Shutter Island, and that week he'll be meeting with Warner Brothers to discuss the casting of his Sinatra film.
Oh, wow.
And they said, do you have any ideas about who might play Sinatra? And it kind of felt like a slip. He said, well, you know, I've obviously worked with Leo several times, and we get along very much, very well. And they said, well, the actor that plays Sinatra, will he be singing in it? And he said, probably not, since Sinatra's the greatest singer that ever lived. We'll probably just use Sinatra's vocals, which
true.
Is smart. Yeah,
that is very smart.
I don't know if Leonardo DiCaprio is Sinatra smart, but I don't discount DiCaprio's abilities to do anything, really.
Under Scorsese? Absolutely not. He's all.
Yeah. So Shutter Island, that's a big one, and we're going to be salivating about that. This is a movie, February 26th, that's been getting suppressed lately. And Kevin Smith, I think, is very forthcoming about things, and he speaks freely and honestly. And so when he hinted that there were major problems with Bruce Willis on the set of this movie, I thought it was interesting. And then he kind of recanted it and said, no, we got along great. But the movie's called A Couple of Dicks, and
yeah.
Obviously Kevin Smith smarting from the who does a porn, Zach and Mary.
Now, is that considered a dud? Can I honestly ask that? Is that considered a dud of a movie?
If it weren't modeled on movies that have done so much better, it
you
probably
mean like
would
other
be.
Apatow movies.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Then yeah, I guess you're right.
But for Kevin Smith, it's about, you know, it's about on par,
it's
I think.
On par with Jay and Silent Bob and Strike Back and Clerks 2.
Yeah.
I mean, it got the audience, but he was trying to go for a... I've always said that Judd Apatow is Kevin Smith with a much larger audience.
Mm-hmm.
And
better, I'm sorry, but better writing ability.
You don't think his writing's good? I think his writing's very good. I think his dialogue's good, but it's just, it's... Kevin Smith, I'm not going to say anything bad about Kevin Smith. I play favorites on this show. I love Kevin Smith. But his films are, especially Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, they are a big inside joke. And if you haven't been watching the other films, you're going to be lost.
See, I think I'm talking about Judd Apatow being a better writer than Kevin Smith.
There is some truth in that.
See, I think that Kevin Smith does write great dialogue.
Yeah.
I think as a writer, though, he's not that great. But, Chris, what are your thoughts on Kevin Smith in general? Is Chris still with us?
Chris, are you with us?
Oh, hang on. For some reason, his line got muted all of a sudden. Okay, Chris, I got you back on.
Hey. Yeah, I was screaming at the top of my... I already went on a six-minute jag about Zach and Miri and Zach make a porno or whatever the hell it is. You missed it.
I'm sorry, buddy. I have no idea why I'm muted.
Why didn't we get to hear that? We deserve that kind
know.
Of generosity.
My phone faded. I called back, and I guess you guys didn't even notice.
I don't have a switchboard, baby. I don't know.
I'm
no,
sorry,
no.
Friend.
I do think it's interesting, you know, yeah, he did make Zach and Miri make a porno, and it was modeled after those movies. Not only was it modeled after the Judd Apatow movies, it starred Seth Rogen, who was arguably the most popular comedic actor of the time, and Elizabeth Banks, who was arguably one of the most popular comedic actresses of the time, and it made about $30 million, if I'm not mistaken, which is pretty much what Kevin Smith movies make. They all make
that
about
is,
$30 million.
That is. You're right.
Considering all of those things, I do think it's considered a bomb, although I didn't think it was that bad. And I like Kevin Smith's movies. I like pretty much everything he's made, with the exception of Jersey Girl. I'm wondering if the title's going to change. This movie and the movie Kick-Ass are making me wonder. Like, I don't know if these two movies are going to get away with those titles. A couple of dicks. Do you think that's going to happen? Do you think that the MPAA is going to get a hold of that? Do you think people are going to put those posters up at bus stops?
Yeah. I mean, that would make two in a row for Kevin Smith, yeah.
Yeah. I think that's going to be a problem, and I can't help but think he's sort of doing it on purpose. Although, it's interesting because you talk about his writing. Well, this is the first time this script is not written by him. Someone else wrote the script. And this is the first time he's ever going to do that. So I think this could be really interesting. And it's got a really good cast. Who gives a fuck what happened on set? You know, like, that sometimes works for a movie. It could work against it. Huckabee had, you know, I Heart Huckabee's had that awful video that was released, and that's one of my favorite movies. I think it's brilliant.
Yeah.
And then there's a blow up on the set of Terminator Salvation, and the movie's a giant turd. I don't think it makes a difference. Like, you know, Bruce Willis in a Kevin Smith movie is intriguing to me. I've always thought Bruce Willis was incredibly talented as a comedian and never really given much of a chance to do that, except in little flourishes inside of his movies. We don't really get to see him as a comedic actor much.
You
so
know,
Kevin
Smith has said that this movie, the camera work is amazing in it. So, I mean, that's not necessarily something
we do. I hope he's going to go to bat for the cinematographer.
He usually doesn't. He usually says my movies generally look like shit. But he says that he's really paid attention to it, and he said this is one that actually feels like a movie.
Yeah, because he didn't write it. And I don't mean that as an insult. I mean his writing does not lend itself to creative camera work, really. Ben Affleck and Joey Lauren Adams are having a conversation about fisting or whatever they're talking about in Chasing Amy, and the camera's moving all over, it wouldn't make any sense. You know what I mean? Like, there's no
point.
Motivation for any camera movement in his movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. That's a very good point.
All right, Chris, this should be a spirited discussion. March 5th, I thought that this was coming out this year in the holiday weekend, which I think would have
been
the perfect.
That's what I thought, too.
Yeah, it would have been the perfect time for it. I mean, my God. But instead, it's coming out March 5th, Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland.
Did we already talk about this?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we have touched on it, but I don't see any reason not to touch on it again.
do you want to ream it? Is that what you want to do?
No, not at all. I always get excited about Tim Burton movies. The problem is I always get let down by them, too. Not always. I shouldn't say always. It's a Harrison Ford situation. It's been a long time since we've seen a really good Sweeney Todd aside, because it's been a while since we've seen a Tim Burton movie that really blew my socks off or blew my skirt up. You know, it's been a pretty long time. He's suited to this material perfectly. It looks perfect for him. I will say that, and it's in 3D. It'll be interesting to see what he can do that with that whole thing, because I think of all the directors, he might be one of the ones that's most suited to work. With 3D, and I think it's got a really cool trailer. It's got Johnny Depp in it, that sort of lends itself to a little bit of box office action, I think.
Jerry,
I think.
I'm sorry, man. Do you think that because we saw this with Where the Wild Things Are, where a children's classic, and parents take their kids to it, and it's a lot darker than they thought it would be. And they're disappointed and they complain and that kind of thing. Do you think that'll happen with Alice in Wonderland?
I don't know, and that's a very good point to bring up because that is the major complaint. And I do like Where the Wild Things Are, obviously, but it's not really a kids' film. And I think that's possible with Alice in Wonderland. But I think Tim Burton. I think the people doing Alice in Wonderland might have a better sense because there was a lot of tie-ins with Where the Wild Things Are too, but there's a lot of tie-ins with this film, and they're aiming younger, I think.
Doesn't seem like that from the marketing. I wouldn't be surprised if this movie got a PG-13 rating. I mean, his movies generally do.
Oh yeah.
And I don't think
you all right, because I'm basing my things on there was an older version of Alice in Wonderland we watched as kids that was definitely like targeted younger.
Yes.
Than let's say Where the Wild Things Are. Where the Wild Things Are, to me, I don't know if anyone, you know, us saying this when we went to go see it, like under the age of 12 would really get into it.
I don't know if they'd get into it either, but it's interesting. I disagree with you. I think, and I don't want to get too far off the 2010 subject here, but I never got to tell you in particular what I thought of Where the Wild Things Are, because I liked it very much too.
Yeah.
But I did think it was a movie for children, but unlike most movies for children, you know, The Incredibles or Monsters and Aliens or whatever, it's a movie, the themes aren't about, you know, being heroic and being good and being honest, being true. The themes of this movie are anger and sadness and confusion and rage.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really bizarre to see a movie that I truly think is made for children. That adults obviously can enjoy it, too, but it's got these darker themes to it, and it's done, and it's handled without any sort of condescension. It's very, very seriously talking to children about how you need to control your emotions.
Mm-hmm. There's no cynicism in the film.
No, no cynicism whatsoever, and it really has a lot of important lessons that, ironically, parents should be teaching their children, rather than taking them to go see Bolt, you know. They should be talking to them about how to control themselves, and that's what this movie is about. It's about self-control. And I personally think it's the best movie of the year so far, and that's all I'll say about that.
I will go there. I would go there with that.
Well, that's probably the most articulate defense of Where the Wild Things Are that I've heard.
Oh, thank you. Well,
I didn't expect that from you.
I didn't expect you to like it, so.
Oh, no, I'm in love with Spike Jonze, and I think what he and Dave Eggers did was really, really fantastic. In fact, it's one of the few examples of a movie that is better than the book, and that's not a dig on the book. The book just didn't have much there. Those themes are there in the book, the themes about confusion and anger and rage and things like that. They're there. They're just very light. They're very, and they're sort of implied, and whereas in this movie, they're really kind of diced up on the table and talked about. But I do think it's the best movie of the year, and I also think that it's a movie that in time is going to be remembered as for some time, and it's going to be one of those movies that we look back on and say, how the hell did no one watch that? Why the hell did that not get a lot of acclaim the way that it should have? I think it's going to be one of those.
Let me ask you guys a question, though, about that. You say, does that matter to you? This is a very important question, the most important question I'll ever ask, and I'll shut up after this. Does that matter to you that it gets acclaim when it's released? Does it matter the critical response or the commercial response? Isn't it just enough? Isn't it more important that you like it? The hell with what anyone else thinks.
No, I to a certain point I agree with you, but I also disagree because I think it speaks to the culture. If the culture is not willing to accept these kind of ideas that should be being, you know, we all know that children are, and adults too, are out of control as far as their emotions, and they're just letting their id control their entire lives. I want it now, you know, the internet has led to these sorts of things.
Oh,
we
it's
should
before
be
the internet,
about,
Chris.
Oh, so it speaks to the culture that a movie like that comes out, or even a movie like, you know, Fargo or something like that, a movie that comes out that gets critical acclaim and it gets lots of nominations, but not a hell of a lot of people saw it. And even people that saw it sort of say, I don't really get it, you know. It does kind
of
speak to the culture, like, why are you not getting this? What is it you don't get? It's a very straightforward movie, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it does bother me when movies don't get the kind of acclaim that they should.
Of course it bothers you, but... I'm very kind of like a fascist when it comes to this. I'm really, at the end of the day, it's got to be something I like. It can't be society. It's got to be something I can relate to. Because at the end of the day, I don't care what the culture thinks, because the culture is going to miss it 9 times out of 10. They're going to embrace Norbit. They're going to embrace Wild Hogs. That's a given. They're not going to embrace Zodiac. They're not going to embrace Where the Wild Things Are, although they've embraced it more than I thought they would, Where the Wild Things Are. But in the
I understand your point, but the thing is, you and I are having an interesting conversation about this movie and about the themes in it, and I just feel like more people should be having that conversation about those ideas and about those emotions. Not necessarily in the context of this movie,
right.
But if this movie facilitates that conversation, then I'm for more people seeing it.
Right,
And it's the kind of movie that could facilitate that conversation. And it's
you know, it's like me and my personal relationships. Like, if a movie is really close to my heart... and I think expresses my sensibilities adequately, I mean perfectly, if somebody else doesn't like that movie, I'm likely not to hang out with that person.
Right. They are suspect. Like.
Yes.
Oh, is this you're referring to someone specifically? Okay.
No, in general. I mean, people in my life. If somebody says to me, "Man, I love that Paul Blart Mall Cop," I'm not going to hang out with you because we're not on the same wavelength. We have nothing to discuss.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
Wow. Kevin James no longer a contestant for our show.
I don't know if Alice in Wonderland is going to hold that kind of weight. We kind of got
no,
off the
I don't think
there.
So.
But yeah. I do think that knowing Tim Burton, he'll probably stick a little bit closer to the Lewis Carroll book, which is quite dark. It is not necessarily for children. In fact, it's more quite literally about logic. And if it sticks to that book, it could be a really interesting movie for him and an excellent follow-up to Sweeney Todd, and maybe a start to a new sort of level in his career. Maybe he'll start making more movies like that.
Okay.
On that same day, Antoine Fuqua, and I didn't just insult you, that's his name, has the movie Brooklyn's Finest, which if I'm correct on this, this has been shelved for a long time, I think.
Yeah,
it's,
I remember reading about this years ago.
Yeah, it's Richard Gere, Don Cheadle, Ethan Hawke, Wesley Snipes, and Vincent D'Onofrio is in it. They're all top-lighting a cop movie under Antoine Fuqua, going back to kind of Training Day area. Could be decent.
With a cast like that, it's very promising. I don't see why not.
Have you seen the trailer to Green Zone, which comes out the next week? The trailer just came up last week.
Yeah, I saw it.
Now, this is a Paul Greengrass movie, and we all love Paul Greengrass, starring Matt Damon. And it's another kind of, here's the plot line. Discovering covert and faulty intelligence causes a U.S. Army officer, played by Damon, to go rogue as he hunts for weapons of mass destruction in an unstable region. My hesitation with this, even though I'm sure it'll be a great movie. Paul Greengrass, Matt Damon as a military going rogue.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little Bourne. It's a little too closely associated with Bourne, isn't it?
Even the preview, if you haven't just clicked on something that says The Green Zone, if you're just sitting in a movie theater and that trailer comes on, I'll bet you 90% of the movie that see the beginning of the trailer think that it's a new Bourne movie, and then all of a sudden this Green Zone title comes up. That's what I was thinking when I watched it. I mean, I watched it at my house. I watched the preview for it because I was anticipating this movie, and I was a little bit surprised by how Bourne it looked. Also, again, I feel the same way as you do, Jamie. It's Paul Greengrass, and it's an interesting story, and it's got a good cast. It's probably going to be a really good movie, but I wonder about the reception it's going to get.
It's based on a good book by a Washington Post journalist, and it's called Imperial Life in the Emerald City. And while reading the book, I never really thought of it as a Bourne movie, obviously, but it does look like that. It's inescapable watching the film, the trailer, and you're like, wow, you know, this really does look like the fourth Bourne movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is interesting. This comes out March 19th, the next week. It's called Hot Tub Time Machine.
Well, I'll be first in line for that one. I can assure you, the three of us, that I'll be there.
Yeah, it seems interesting. Here's the plot synopsis. After a night of drinking Red Bull and vodkas, a group of guys travel back in time to when they were younger. The thing that makes it seem interesting is it has John Cusack, Crispin Glover, and Chevy Chase in it. That sounds colorful, doesn't it?
Camping out now.
That sounds like the cast is what makes that seem really kind of fascinating to me.
Yeah.
All right. The next week on March 26th is Clash of the Titans, the redo of that.
I think I'm probably, of the three of us, the one who can really speak at length about this.
Okay, you do it. I'm going to go get a Mountain Dew. I'll be back
Thank
2 seconds.
Thank you so much, Jamie. That was so flattering.
I was looking for a time to do this.
Okay, well, do it now then. Okay, in 1981, I think it was 1981, my mom took us to see this movie, and it's the first time we bought scalp tickets because the woman who bought them for her kids in front of us, like, she was misbehaving or something. She was like, well, do you want our tickets? Because I'm not taking this brat to see it. So, yeah, we bought scalp tickets, and I loved it. I thought it was great. Do I think it needs to be remade? I don't know, but it sounds the director from The Incredible Hulk and Danny the Dog and everything, it's got your favorite actor, Chris Sam Worthington, in it.
Yeah, I like Sam Worthington. I thought he was the best thing about the Terminator movie, frankly.
He was the only good thing. I would have walked out if he wasn't in it.
No, I really do agree with you there. But I do think that it does need to be remade, and I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why this movie needs to be remade. Jurassic Park. That's why. Special effects were fine. Like, we were willing to accept that a movie looked cheesy, like Clash of the Titans. I mean, obviously, if you go back and watch it now, it looks so cheesy.
There's a nostalgic factor in that now.
There is a nostalgic factor, but it's not. It almost takes you out of it. If you've never seen it before, you couldn't enjoy it because it's that cheesy. And ever since Jurassic Park came along and the CGI really took over, and special effects really took a turning point with that movie, there's a lot of technology that could be lent to Clash of the Titans. Clash of the Titans is a well-made movie. I'm talking about the Hamlin movie, you know, the Harryhausen movie. It's a very well-made movie. The only problem with it is that the effects are so dated that it really does take you out of it. It really is extremely distracting to watch that movie because the effects are ridiculous.
Really? You think... Because this is what I got to say. As much as I do, obviously, the Jurassic Park is like the turning point to Rosetta Stone, because this is the problem films have been having since the original King Kong and the original Godzilla movies, is how do you make this look realistic? When do we get to this point? Now, having said that, I'm going to be very honest with you. I don't think anything comes close to the 1933 King Kong, CGI included.
Well, that is true. In the right hands, any technology can be made believable. And I just don't think that technology... I don't know. I'm a little bit mixed on this because I agree with you about King Kong. You know, it's true. It stands the test of time. And it's every bit as gripping as the Peter Jackson King Kong.
Yes, it is.
But this movie...
no, I'm not even comparing Clash of Titans. I'm very curious to see what they're going to do with the special effects and everything. But I do, for Ray Harryhausen, I do have a soft place in my heart because I grew up with
him. I do, too. And I watch it when it comes on. And I watch Sinbad when it comes on. And they always come on TV. And they'll be coming on soon because they always come on in the fall time. Clash of the Titans and Sinbad are always on TV. And I always watch them. But lately, I find it hard to watch without laughing. And it takes me out of the movie. It really does take me out of the movie because it's so ridiculous. You know, from Medusa to the Kraken to, everything, the entire movie.
Now, I remember watching it nonstop. They showed it all the time in school. So if nothing else,
Clash of the Titans in school?
Oh, gosh, they showed it to us like every week.
What school did you go to that you got to watch Clash of the Titans?
I guess it's a rare thing. I went to school here in my hometown, but if nothing else, they can update that videotape with a new version. I'd never been into mythology at all, so I could give two turds about the question.
I know we know that you don't care about it, but I mean,
yeah. But either way, I'm not offended.
Well, I'm gonna go see it with you, Jamie, because. You know, I'm just going to come down there and see it. I want to see your face while watching it.
April 16th, Kick-Ass. We're talking about Kick-Ass. Now, I can't think of a more appropriate title for the movie because that's what everybody walks out of it saying. You know, that was Kick-Ass. But it opens opposite Machete.
Oh, shit. I'll be doing double duty that weekend.
This seems like they're vying for the same audience.
Yeah, this is problematic.
No, it's not. Kick-Ass will win that weekend. Machete was a funny preview. Machete is going to suffer in my... if I'm going to make a little Nostradamus-like prediction here, Machete is going to suffer from Snakes on a Plane syndrome or Grindhouse syndrome. Everybody wants to talk about how awesome it's going to be, except for no one really wants to pay $10 to go see it because it's... That you know what you're getting, like you know what it is. It just doesn't. It's not going to be the kind of new sort of experience that everyone seems to think Kick-Ass is from the early reviews that are coming out. It's like a really, really entertaining type movie.
Right.
Between the two, I don't think Machete stands a chance. You know, and just basically with Danny Trejo as your lead, you know. I like Danny Trejo, but he's not Clooney, you know. He's not going to be opening the movie.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that Shorts, the movie that they released, Shorts, that they did last year, will have a longer shelf life?
Why?
I know, I'm just asking, because it's Rodriguez. They're both Rodriguez films, so I figured I'd...
You know, Rodriguez is very talented, but for every Sin City, there is a Shorts.
It's a Shorts. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I do think that it's not... Like, you know, I mean, this is a hard conversation to have about every one of these movies we're talking about, because we really don't know much about these movies so far. I'm just going on my gut instinct and what I know of watching the marketplace and seeing what happens. You've never seen a movie like this come out and be really successful. It doesn't really happen. This sort of throwback nostalgia type movie, they don't do very well. They're just not successful. Whereas Kick-Ass, although it's not a superhero thing that everybody needs, it's not Spider-Man, it's not Iron Man, it's still a superhero movie, and it's going to be big, and it's going to be, you know, it's got the high production value. It's got the money behind it that makes people want to see it. And whereas Machete looks like it was filmed in 1975, you know, like, that's what it's, and I don't even know that, but I know that, you know what I mean? Like, you know that's what it's
going
to look like.
For me, they're both going after, and I agree with you, Kick-Ass will win, but they're both going after the same target demographic, which is the cultish, younger crowd.
Well,
and also, you got to think, Machete has, the only reason we know about Machete is because we saw Grindhouse.
Yeah.
Now, how many people saw Grindhouse? We all know that it wasn't very
many.
Well, so the only people that have any idea what that is, other than some weird movie about a Mexican with a machete on a motorcycle, are the people that saw Grindhouse. Nobody saw it. So I just don't see that this movie's going to make any money at all.
So wait, is
also,
any coming out for Easter?
Yeah. Well, is that Easter? April 20th,
no,
April 16th?
It might be. Oh, my God.
Death at a Funeral is another movie that comes out that day. It's notable because it's a Neil LaBute movie starring Martin Lawrence, Danny Glover, Chris Rock, Tracy Morgan, and James Marsden. It's interesting.
That's quite an – and this is a remake of the British comedy, right?
Yeah, yeah. And you got to love those Neil LaBute comedies.
Obviously a dark comedy.
Yeah, it's Neil LaBute.
Okay, and then also on that day, carrying on the tradition of SNL making god-awful movies, MacGruber.
Here is where we differ, my friend. I am excited about MacGruber.
Are you kidding me, Chris?
No,
I
didn't even know I
am not.
Movie until you read that, so...
Now, I don't think it's going to be a big hit. I don't even know if it's going to be that good. I just think that the MacGruber skit is one of the few long-running skits over the past 5 years that still is good every time it comes on, you know? Like, they've had trouble getting any skits. Like, back in the day, they would have, you know, Samurai Delicatessen or Wild and Crazy Guys. They would have these skits that would run for years and years, and people would look forward to them. They don't have a lot of those anymore, and I do think MacGruber is one of them that works every time.
Oh, my God.
Oh, it's hilarious.
Oh, man, we so disagree about that. It's like a big thud in another otherwise lousy show. It's like always the lousiest section for me.
Oh, couldn't disagree more. It's the only redeeming quality in the show whenever it's on, in my opinion.
Okay. April 23rd, Wall Street 2, guys. So Michael Douglas returns out of prison. Another protege, Shia LaBeouf. Frank Langella's in it. Charlie Sheen comes back in at least a cameo as Bud Fox.
Thank God.
A cheesy name, worthy of a cheesy actor. So Wall Street 2, will Oliver get his mojo back with this subject? His first sequel. What do you guys think?
No.
No. It will go over as well as W, probably.
Yeah, I just don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Like, I shouldn't say no. It's a little too early to say. I would like to see the preview. I would like to know what's going on with this movie. If it's just a sequel, then no. If he really is trying to make a statement about what's going on today, as opposed to just bringing back, you know, the Gordon Gekko character, then maybe it will work. But I don't know. It seems like such a long shot, doesn't it? Doesn't it just feel like a long shot?
Yeah, it does seem like it really does.
I think the interest will be mostly in Michael Douglas returning to that role that's he made iconic. In terms of its success hinging on whether or not Oliver Stone will be current with it, I mean, W and World Trade Center were pretty current.
No, I'm not talking about whether it'll be successful.
Though.
I'm talking about whether it'll be good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think this movie will be successful either way. Even if it's great, no one's going to go see Wall Street 2.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking... 22 years after the fact.
Yeah. No. It doesn't stand a chance of being successful. I'm only talking about whether or not it's going to be a return to form for Oliver Stone.
I was too, because I didn't like World Trade Center and I didn't like W, and both of those were current. So I'm talking about quality of film too. The next week is Nightmare on Elm Street. Is this a movie that is prime for redo audience-wise?
I think this could be successful. These movies, the Friday the 13th movie was successful, the Texas Chainsaw movie was successful. These movies will always be successful.
Any of these movies is a more important question.
No.
Yeah, Chris really likes The Nightmare on Elm Street, don't you?
The other ones that you mentioned, Friday the 13th and Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, no, I don't like the remakes. I mean, I thought the Texas Chainsaw one was decent, and I didn't see the Friday the 13th one. I don't really care. However, Jamie's right. I have a special place in my heart for the original Nightmare on Elm Street movies,
Freddy Krueger
in particular, and I think a lot of people do. I do think that those movies have sort of a bigger audience than the Friday the 13th movies.
And you know what? Yeah, and horror movies generally have, I mean, Paranormal Activity notwithstanding, they generally have 1 week, that opening week, and where audiences will flock to them, and then it'll die, a quick death. I think that'll be true of Nightmare on Elm Street, because the following week we have Iron Man 2.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
That's the behemoth, isn't it? I mean, are we all agreed that this is going to be, like, the most jazzed about kind of, certainly of the summer season film out of the gate?
I need to get another drink on my soda. I'll be right back.
Okay.
Because you were allowed to do it. I was hoping I would be allowed to do it.
Go ahead. Get another drink of your soda.
Thank you.
Chris, Iron Man 2... big cast. I just saw something on Entertainment Tonight about Iron Man 2. They're so schlocky. Like, they have exclusive access to the Iron Man 2 set, and they spend 3 minutes of a 5-minute segment talking about, so do you work out? Are you on a special diet? And all this kind of stuff. But, it all hinges on Robert Downey Jr., Iron Man, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, the first one did. The second one, the success of it is in the bag. But, you know, we've seen this before where a movie sort of comes out like Austin Powers or Batman Begins. They sort of are released and they do well, but it takes a little bit of time. It takes DVD or VHS for everyone to really get into it. And then the second one comes out and just blows it out of the water. Now, Iron Man doesn't exactly fit in that category because it was successful in its theatrical run, very successful. But I do think this is going to be another one of those times where the second movie, whether it's, you know, the second Austin Powers movie or the second Batman movie, the second Iron Man movie is going to be head and shoulders far more successful than the first one was. And the first one was very successful, but I think this is going to be the biggest movie of the year, yeah. Without question, I think it's going to be gigantic, and I think it'll probably own a couple of weeks there in the early summer.
I know you have to be excited about Mickey Rourke, but even more excited about your girl Scarlett.
I am pretty excited about that, yeah. I'm excited about the whole thing, because I think the first Iron Man movie is really good, and so I think, and not just Mickey Rourke and Scarlett Johansson, also excited about Sam Rockwell, who's a guy who's sort of on the cusp for a long time. And he's not even one of these guys. There's been a lot of actors that have been on the cusp for a long time. Like Billy Crudup, seems like for 15 years we've been talking about how Billy Crudup is the next big thing. But he made a lot of shit. Whereas Sam Rockwell just consistently has made good movies over and over again.
He stayed edgy, yeah.
Right, he stayed very edgy, and he still if you go up to 10 people on the street and ask them who Sam Rockwell is, most of them don't know. So maybe this will sort of catapult him into that sort of success, I'm hoping. But either way, it doesn't matter. It's going to be huge. And I'll be there. I'm sold already.
I'll be there, man. The next week is actually Robin Hood, which is the Ridley Scott Rob. We're on to Robin Hood. You just missed a little bit of Iron Man 2.
Okay.
Ridley Scott, Russell Crowe. Now, the last big Robin Hood release, obviously, when Kevin Costner used to be popular, that was a huge movie.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think this one has that potential?
I don't know.
Yeah, again, this is one of those... This is one of those projects that we can talk about and be excited about, but we haven't really seen how they're marketing it yet, and that's going to be the difference. If they market it like, you know, this real-to-life story and, you know, like less of an action-adventure movie and more of a historical type thing, then it's not going to be that successful. If they market it as an action-adventure type movie, which they probably will,
yeah,
it will be successful, I think, because it's got a good cast and it's Robin Hood, and it has been a long time since we've seen something, a Robin Hood movie. So, yeah, I mean, I think it could be really, really popular, really successful.
I don't know if people are excited about Robin Hood. I mean, the people that go to the movies and spend the money nowadays, does Robin Hood, maybe a lot like Clash of the Titans, does it play a little too old-fashioned?
It might, but it is Crowe under Scott's direction, and you got Cate Blanchett, you got Mark Strong, Matthew McFadden, Max von Sydow, William Hurt, Danny Huston. I mean, it is a great cast. Now, whether that translates into younger kids, I don't know.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. It'll be interesting to see if it's successful. I'm asking like box office questions just to get a conversation going on some of these movies, but. Ultimately, I just care if it's a good film. But the next week, you know, when you're in the summer, you have a very short time to get out and really make your mark, because week after week there's a big movie coming out. And the week after Robin Hood is the fourth Shrek film.
Oh, my God.
The first two, great. The third one, just awful, I thought. Is it beating a dead Shrek at this point?
It might be.
It is. Yeah.
I don't remember the third one at all.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how bad it was.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be successful. Like, people are going to go see it, you know. But will it be... It's never going to be Shrek 1 again. You know, it's never going to be exciting the way that the first Shrek movie seemed sort of edgy. It seemed like it really was almost more for adults than it was for children.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think it's ever going to be that again.
The next week, you know, this thing has gotten a lot of play already, this Prince of Persia movie. These typically aren't my kind of movie, so I'm not really one to speak about it. But it does seem like a cheesy Disney
movie. It's
based
on a video game, right?
Oh, well, there you go.
No, but I'm actually asking a legitimate, like, honest...
It might, I guess. That same day, Sex and the City 2 comes out, and... I'm sure Sex and the City will whip its ass.
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I think Sex and the City obviously will do very well, but it just depends what the word of mouth is on this Jake Gyllenhaal film. And I haven't seen the trailer yet. I know it's online. I don't really watch the trailers when they come online. I like to watch them in the theater, but I don't know. I couldn't tell you, Jamie.
Now, this is interesting here, June 11th. It's interesting that this day two movies come out, and both of these movies... The thought that goes through my head are you kidding? Is this for real? They're both coming out the same day. The Karate Kid remake, starring Jackie Chan, and the A-Team.
Jackie Chan's in the Karate Kid remake?
He's the Miyagi, yeah.
Oh, my God. I'm an old man already. If he's considered Miyagi, oh, my God. Okay, shit.
Yeah, that's about as cheesy as it gets.
Mm-hmm.
And the A-Team, I saw that original... the still that they came out with of the cast. And, you know, I'm sure it'll be a cool part for Liam Neeson. And but that was another thought that came in my head. How cheesy can you get?
But you actually have a very interesting movie coming out that day. And it's neither one of those. It's the Get Him to the Greek, which I believe is a Judd Apatow movie, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, produced by Judd Apatow.
Isn't that animated, though?
No. It's the character from the Forgetting Sarah Marshall movie, the Russell Brand character from that movie. It's sort of a spin-off of Forgetting Sarah Marshall. It's produced by Judd Apatow, but directed by someone else.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, that could be successful, although I don't know that American audiences really are going to be down for a Russell Brand movie. They liked him in Forgetting Sarah Marshall, but when he hosted the MTV Movie Awards a couple years ago or last year or whatever it was, people sort of cocked their heads, didn't really get his humor. I don't know that a two-hour movie of his humor will really go over so well with Americans.
I think it's probably best in small doses.
Yeah, that's the positive. I just brought that up because that title rung a bell. That's why I brought that up, you know. So,
but between The Karate Kid and The A-Team, which one would win out?
You mean which one will suck more?
Well, I think that they will have equal suck value, but which one would more people be likely to want to see, to get excited about?
It's an interesting.
They're both nostalgia. You know, they're both 80s nostalgia.
Yeah,
they are. Probably, I would guess The Karate Kid, because we've sort of seen the A-Team type stuff before,
mm-hmm.
and obviously we've seen The Karate Kid stuff before, too, but martial arts, big budget, mainstream martial arts movies.
Family.
And family, and Jackie Chan in this sort of iconic role that, you know, Pat Morita sort of made famous. I do think, if you are going to remake The Karate Kid, I do think Jackie Chan's probably the perfect guy to play that part. I don't care for Jackie Chan movies, but I do think that'll probably be a really successful movie.
Jackie Chan movie in January,
okay.
The Spy Next Door. I'm being facetious when I say that, but
June 18th. I don't know anything about this Jonah Hex.
It's based on a famous, like a really cult, like very comic book. And it's a curiosity. I don't know anything other than that. You forgot to mention Footloose.
I haven't mentioned it yet. You're right, because I just started June 18th.
Oh, okay. I thought you would have started with that one. Okay, sorry. Never mind. I'm going to shut up now.
So Jonah Hex, they're betting on it being a big comic book movie for
mm-hmm.
the summer. I hope it is, just because I want the best for what's-his-name, Diane Lane's husband.
Josh Brolin,
yeah. Wow, yeah, you really, really care so much about him. Diane Lane's husband, there you go.
Yeah, I just emasculated him. Also on that day, you know, there's this running theme of 80s nostalgia with Footloose. Kenny Ortega. Footloose, does that have currency? Do any of these 80s movies really have current currency?
No, we saw it with Fame. No one cares.
Yeah.
That's true. That's very true.
I don't think they will with Footloose. I don't think that story is not strong enough for a remake, you know. It's just not, it's not a story that is, like Clash of the Titans, for instance, is a good story. It's interesting. It's got interesting characters. It's got an interesting arc. Footloose was interesting when it came out with Kevin Bacon, but we've seen it 105 times since then, something very similar.
Even when it came out, it was pretty damn ridiculous.
Yeah, no, that's true. But it was popular, and so, you know, I don't think that people are going to go see that. I don't think they care. And I, even as you mentioned, the star of the movie, I don't even, maybe I'm an old man, but I don't know who the hell that is.
who is it? Who is the star?
I think it's, oh, no, Zac Efron dropped out? I'm not sure. But it's Kenny Ortega. He has a decent track record.
I've been following this work
for years. Toy Story 3 opens that day. So really any discussion of any other movie is minimalized under Toy Story 3. I mean, that's behemoth. That's one of the few kids' movies where I would actually really look forward to.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a behemoth, but can it be as good as the first two? Again, look at Shrek. And I know Pixar is different from DreamWorks. Pixar has a better reputation, but it is a part three, and part threes are notoriously bad. You're hard-pressed to name any part threes that were actually good movies, other than the Bourne is the first one that pops to mind.
Return of the King? Or?
Well, I don't really count Return of the King or any of those as a part one or two or three, because that was all written.
That's true. No, I understand that.
This is an original script. I don't know. Like, what are the chances that it's going to be as good as the first two? It's very slim, in my opinion. Like,
there's been a lot of time in between them, but don't we say that about every Pixar movie? What are the chances that this will be as good as the last one?
Yeah, that's true.
Well, that's true, and I was just about to say that, but it does, they do have to fail eventually. I mean, they can't.
And we always say that, too.
Right. You are a cold-blooded son of a bitch.
Well, they do continue to surprise me, and they do continue to prove me wrong, and frankly, I'm happy about that because we've got good movies to show for it, but
yeah.
How long can it go on? How long can we keep making really good Pixar movies? And not just really good, like truly memorable and interesting movies that have something to say. Again, I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. I'm just a little bit pessimistic about it.
Adam Sandler, he has a movie out the next weekend, a comedy 30 years after their high school graduation, five friends reunite for a holiday weekend. It's notable because this is probably, it's another one of those Sandler movies where he gives work to all of his friends. Adam Sandler, Rob Schneider, Steve Buscemi, Kevin James, David Spade, Chris Rock, Gary Busey. How do you throw Gary Busey in anything over there? Norm MacDonald, Tim Meadows, Colin Quinn.
Colin Quinn?
Yeah, it's a big comedy cast.
That's good, good, good. I'm so glad Colin Quinn is still alive. Thank God, okay.
Yeah.
I'm very serious when I say that.
Colin Quinn is hysterical, actually, I think.
Okay, you're going up in my book, Jamie. Okay.
Yeah, I see him on Howard Stern. He's just hysterical.
Yeah, he's great.
Dennis Dugan directing, which, you know, he's been behind some big comedies in the past. So that might be a big Sandler movie, and that tends to be a weekend for him.
That does, that's right.
Yeah, June 25th. His movies are touch and go in terms of how good they are. But
well, he's another one, like Carrie, when he does something really good like Punch Drunk Love, everyone stays away.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But it only has 5 days because Wednesday, June 30th, and this is interesting, this is the third Twilight movie will open up that day. 6 months after the second one, which
mm-hmm.
opens up like next week or so. So they're really pushing that crowd for Twilight. And I could care less about Twilight, so I don't have much to say about it. But I think we're all in agreement that that's a big movie.
Oh, yeah, you can't escape that.
Nothing else stands a chance in its wake. Yeah, absolutely not.
Well, that's a shame, too, because the 4th of July weekend, there's always the big... big movie that opens up that weekend. I was trying to look for an adjective, and I couldn't find it.
And both.
But I don't know that this 4th of July weekend has that. We have the M. Night Shyamalan movie, the Avatar movie, The Last Airbender,
mm-hmm.
which I guess they've dropped the Avatar from the title, which is probably smart.
Yeah, because you're just asking for trouble.
And then we have the new Tom Cruise movie, like a romantic kind of action comedy with he and Cameron Diaz.
That could work.
Yeah, I suppose it might. Directed by James Mangold.
There you go. I mean, the guy did Walk the Line and Heavy. I mean, it could work. I'm not saying this is a surefire thing, but it's interesting. Those two working off each other has potential.
Mm-hmm.
I do think it's a good idea for Tom Cruise to stick with light fare.
Yeah.
If it stands a chance of working, I think he's... first and foremost, extremely smart when it comes to his career,
mm-hmm.
with the exception of a couple years ago where he got off track a little bit.
In terms of his choices, yeah.
In terms of his
film.
Choices, he's very, very smart, and I think he knows that, and I think he understands that right now he doesn't need to be making, you know, The Last Samurai or anything where he's going to be staring directly and intensely into the camera because people will just laugh him off the screen, you know, like... I think it's a really good idea for him to make something light, and that's what this sounds like. So it's got a chance. It's got a good chance.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll breeze through through these because we're running out of time. July 16th, Inception, the new Chris Nolan movie. Leonardo DiCaprio, Ellen Page.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yeah. Aces in my book.
Yeah, dude, this is a good one. This is a good one. I'm all for it.
I'm as excited about this as I am Shutter Island and The Gruber.
That's going to be a quote for our show.
You see, I think they should release Inception 4th of July weekend.
They're trying to capitalize on the Dark Knight's release date, I think, aren't they? Or
yeah.
I think it's good. I think it's a good idea to get away from that 4th of July weekend because people have expectations of a big, dumb movie that weekend. And so I think it is kind of smart to wait a couple weeks, let that die down, and let the fervor for something with a little bit more substance build.
Yeah, you're right, you're right. The next week, July 23rd, is also has connections to Tom Cruise because he passed on the lead in this movie. He was attached for a while, and then he dropped out, only to be replaced by Angelina Jolie. And that movie is Salt. The trailer came out last week, and it looks like a solid kick-ass action movie, and Angelina looks like she's definitely in her element there.
With Philip Noyce directing, so I think it has potential.
Yeah.
Brian Pegg and Skip.
Awful title, but...
It's not the title I would go with, but, no.
Yeah. She's like a whistleblower in a salt factory. That's what it sounds like. Also a potential big comedy hit, because they always have... There's always a comedy hit that strikes in the summer that takes off above all others, but this has not very much time to do that, because on the July 23rd, we have Dinner for Schmucks, which is a Jay Roach movie, and he's directed the highest-grossing comedy ever, with Paul Rudd, who's always hysterical.
Yeah, he is.
With Steve Carell, with Zach, the six-syllable last name from The Hangover. It's a great cast of guys for a comedic movie with Jay Roach at the helm, I think.
Yeah, I think this is another one.
Is this a remake by any chance?
It is. It's a remake
of the John Favreau. It's a remake of the John Favreau IFC series, right?
No, this is a remake of the French movie, The Dinner Game, right?
Yes, exactly.
Well, this has a lot of potential. I mean,
yeah, I think this is one of those surefire hits. Paul Rudd, Steve Carell, and Zach Galifianakis, like that seals the deal right there. And then you get a title like Dinner for Schmucks, and then a concept that's behind the movie, and then a director like Jay Roach. Like, if it were unsuccessful, I would be very, very shocked.
Yeah,
but, I don't think that's going to happen. I think this is going to be a big movie, and probably really good, too.
Yeah.
Well, but the next week we have Little Fockers, the third Meet the Parents movie.
Really excited for that?
When I refer to the biggest grossing comedy,
yeah, I know what
I'm referring, Meet the Fockers, not Meet the Parents. The second movie was the highest grossing. But this one, you know, another title, which I think that they'll keep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, this one, I mean, it's not exactly, it doesn't have the word dicks in it, and it doesn't have the word ass in it. And that they ran into that problem with Meet the Fockers, and then it just sort of went away. I think they had to change the spelling of it or something like that. But it brushed under the carpet. I don't think it's going to be a big deal this time, because I think people get the joke and are willing to ignore it. I don't think that's
going to be a big deal. I think they'll come out with a trailer around Christmas time for Little Fockers, because they just started shooting it. So I think they'll race to get a trailer out. And if the trailer is hysterical, if it gets a big reaction, then it's going to be a huge movie. I think they need to start building it now with a really funny trailer.
Mm-hmm. True.
But also on that day, this is the other Harrison Ford movie on July 30th. It's called Morning Glory. A hotshot television producer has set the challenge of reviving a struggling morning show program despite the constant feuding of its high-profile anchors. So this is Harrison Ford's Switching Channels.
Yeah.
Remember that movie?
Yeah, which was just a really bad update of the front page. So
yeah. That's the first thing I thought of when I read about this Morning Glory. But anyway, it's Harrison Ford trying comedy up against, you know, what could potentially be the biggest comedy of the year on the same day. Again,
Ford's glory hole.
Again, if you're going to do counter-programming, make sure it's counter. Pay attention to the counter part.
Wise advice.
Yeah. August 6th, I don't know why I have this listed down here. Let me look it up. It's called The Other Guys.
Mm.
I'm looking it up.
I'm looking it up too, man.
It is. Why do I have it down here? Oh, it's an Adam McKay movie. It's an action movie. Mark Wahlberg, Will Ferrell, and The Rock. Oh, okay. There you go.
And Samuel Jackson and Eva Mendes and Anne Heche. And
Michael Keaton.
Paris Hilton.
Michael Keaton and Paris Hilton.
Dude, I am so there. You sold me on that.
It's an action comedy.
I'd like to see a movie of just Michael Keaton and Paris Hilton having a long conversation. See all the faces, all the faces Michael Keaton would be making at Paris Hilton.
Well, that'd be a monologue on Michael Keaton's part.
Yeah, I think the two of them should remake My Dinner with Andre or something like that.
That's curious. I'm looking forward to that. Actually, I'll watch anything with Michael Keaton.
August has a great movie coming out.
Who?
No, August has a great film. That's
I know. Hopefully we'll get to it. Is it on that day?
No, it's later in the month.
Okay. August 13th. We're about to get to it. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
August 13th, Friday the 13th, part 2. I'm surprised that they're remaking it. Well, no. I should take that back.
Yeah,
but I wouldn't have done it. I mean, but anyway, there you have it. But the weekend after that, on August 20th, is actually a movie that I know Jerry and I are majorly looking forward to.
Yes.
Speaking of 80s nostalgia, it is it's The Expendables, which they've pushed back from February to this late August date on the 20th. They just shot, did you read the report that they just shot the scene with Stallone, Bruce Willis, and Schwarzenegger together?
No, yeah. that's awesome, man.
Yeah, they just shot it. It takes place in a church. I guess Bruce Willis is the guy that hires them to do jobs or something,
mm-hmm.
and Schwarzenegger is the rival hitman, or whatever language you want to use.
Yeah.
And Willis and Stallone are talking about the job or whatever, and then Schwarzenegger walks in, big and bad self, and they have like a good 5-minute scene together. My worry is, well, it's a Stallone movie. You're going to get what you pay for. But my worry is that every expectation of this film is going to hinge on this 5-minute scene, but you still have a 90-minute movie left to go. You know,
have quite a cast, though. I mean,
yeah, I don't know. People were excited about. There was buzz about this movie before Schwarzenegger really signed on to do that, or Bruce Willis. Like there was buzz simply about Jason Statham, Stallone, Jet Li, Mickey Rourke. There was
Eric Roberts, Dolph Lundgren.
Just about that crew, there was already buzz, and I think that the Schwarzenegger and Willis thing, I think that's just a cherry on top.
Yeah, really.
And I do think it'll probably be really, really successful. I don't know if I'll go see it, but I mean, it's not the kind of thing that excites me at all. But
you still need to see Rambo, man. I'm telling you.
No.
Put your brain in a jar and sit down and watch Rambo.
I can't do that. I don't get excitement out of watching movies like that the way that some people do, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I will sometimes. I will, you know, I won't say that I won't. I just haven't gotten around to seeing it. I mean, I rented G.I. Joe and watched it, believe it or not.
Okay.
And
do you want to talk about that, or do you need a psychiatric?
Not really. There's not much to say. I mean, I tried to turn my brain off and watch it, and I didn't find it to be as awful as Transformers, but it's in the same ballpark. I mean, you know, it's an F+.
Can I ask you an honest question about the film?
Film, please.
All right, hey, can I ask an honest question about the 90-minute advertisement for toys?
Yeah.
Didn't you think for the amount of, it cost like a lot of money to make, it looked incredibly cheap?
Well, I watched it on Blu-ray.
Doesn't
so I
matter where
it
you
did.
Watch. You could have watched it on your iPhone.
I didn't think it did look that cheap. In fact, I thought that the action sequences were pretty sharp.
Really? Because I got to tell you, dude, it looked like an unfinished advertisement.
Like the early Wolverine prints or something
like
that?
Yeah, it did look like that. I was like flabbergasted like how cheap it looked with all that money they put behind it.
To me, the explosions always look cheap. Like,
yeah,
that's
what I mean. Like
there.
It just looked really like the cartoon looked better.
Okay,
yeah.
September 10th. Ben Affleck is behind the camera again for a movie called The Town. He's also starring in it. So The Town. So we're looking forward to that, I'm sure. At least I am.
Because
Ben Affleck, another directorial effort from him. And this is interesting. The Town is interesting because it was going to be Adrian Lyne's next movie. He'd been circling it for years, and I guess he dropped out. So Ben Affleck took over what would have been an Adrian Lyne movie.
Oh, God, that's a point of derision, I'm sure.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how he can sort of flex his muscles in a different kind of way. And I don't know much
mm-hmm.
about this story, but I do know just hearing that Adrian Lyne was interested in it tells me that it's quite different from Gone Baby Gone.
Yeah, it's a script that's been around for a while, and everybody's crazy. They say this is a great script. I'd be interested to see him acting in a film he's directing and see how he handles that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you and I were making the comparison the other night that he has a lot of similarities to Robert Redford, which is he is very charismatic, not the greatest actor in the world, but you like to see him on screen. But it's possible that he might be a better director than he is an actor, and I think that might turn out to be true. I hope it turns out to be true because I like Gone Baby Gone very much. So I'll definitely see anything he makes, and if it's this project, that sounds really cool.
Speaking of great directors, Jerry, David Gordon Green.
I knew you were going to bring this up. It's why I had an anxiety attack when I read about what our show was about on Wednesday.
I know, dude. Listen to this. Listen to this, guys. Not only David Gordon Green, who Jerry is crazy about, starring Zooey Deschanel.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and Natalie Portman. So, I mean.
How hard are you right now? That's all I want to know.
Not as what you would think, because I like Zooey because actually, believe it or not, in her, you know, ever since All the Real Girls and let's go way back, Mumford. Some of the characters she plays, and especially the independent films, they're really cool and they're really relatable. And that's what her, as far as her acting goes in those films, she's always said, if I can make people like understand the characters I play, I'm doing a good job. And she does. In these smaller films, she's really good. I don't know about this one, because this one sounds like a head trip of a film.
A fantasy movie about an arrogant, lazy prince and his more heroic brother who must complete a quest in order to save their father's kingdom.
Yeah.
It's called Your Highness.
It's called Your Highness, which refers to, I think, James Franco's character.
Yeah, let's not forget that it has James Franco in it again. And
that piqued
my interest.
Yeah.
Saw 7 in 3D October 22nd. That's all we got to say about that. So
yeah, really.
They're still going through with those. November 5th. You know, they get these dates that I guess no. When did The Hangover come out? That was earlier this year.
That was in
June. Oh yeah, was it June?
Yeah, it was like early June.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Well, Todd Phillips' next movie comes out November 5th of next year. It's called Due Dates. A father-to-be is forced to hitch a ride with a college slacker on a road trip in order to make it to his child's birth on time. Mm. Todd Phillips directing, starring Robert Downey Jr.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds perfect on paper, except we all know that Robert Downey Jr. is hysterical, but there's not a long list of hysterical Robert Downey Jr. movies. So it'll be interesting to see what he can do with a straight-up comedy.
I think he can do wonders with it.
I think he can do. I'm just saying it'll be interesting to see at this point in his career where he has clout and he can get cast again in a movie like this. I think it'll probably be very, very funny.
Yeah, I think in terms of making a popular comedic vehicle with Robert Downey Jr., I think that this is a good property to do it with and a good director.
Exactly.
Tony Scott and Denzel Washington are together again on November 12th.
What movie is that?
It's called, I'll give it to you, man. It's called Unstoppable. A rail company frantically works to prevent an unmanned half-mile-long freight train carrying combustible liquids and poisonous gas from wiping out.
Technically, it is also unmarried.
Yeah.
They're trying to keep this train that's unstoppable with all this poisonous gas from wiping out a city. It's Tony Scott. It's Denzel Washington. The Taking of Pelham 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
It's got Chris Pine and Rosario Dawson, Kevin Dunn, Jeff Wincott. But it does sound like, I mean, can these guys stay away from trains?
That's a very specific typecasting.
Yeah.
Like, we only want Tony Scott to make rail car movies with Denzel Washington.
Yeah, the Tony Scott-Denzel Washington collaboration is the perfect Exhibit A for diminishing returns. Like,
I'm not going to argue with you there.
And it just has never gotten as good as it was with Crimson Tide. It got close with Man on Fire, and then, you know, then you're getting into stuff like
Deja Vu.
Deja Vu and Pelham 1-2-3. Like, we're getting way far away from the bullseye here, guys. Like, you know...
Yeah, everything's deja vu when the two of them get together. November 19th, though, is Harry Potter. We got the first part of the final two-part installment. So they're going to call it like Harry Potter, whatever the name of that book was.
The Deathly Hallows, Part 1.
Yeah,
it's a very strange thing because you know, they're obviously, they're, first of all, I do think they're a little bit scared of the Twilight film, but also they just want to try to hold on to the property as long as they can.
Not only right. that, but that last book was huge. I mean,
yeah,
it really
is a
was
big
huge.
Book. It's going to be hard to...
But I do think they, I also think that there is a little truth to the fact that they're trying to wring out as much as possible from it, because Return of the King was a huge book, too, and it was
yeah.
made into a... I mean, you could make a 3.5-hour final Harry Potter movie, and it would make a hell of a lot of money.
Yeah.
But if you make two of them, they're both going to make a hell of a lot of money.
They are.
Yeah.
So,
you're right.
It,
you're right.
It is. You're right, Chris.
Will we hear from any of those people after this movie is over?
I think so.
I think Daniel Radcliffe is a really talented actor, actually, and it's been interesting to watch him mature through these movies. And it flies under the radar. Those movies don't get their credit for having gotten as good as they've gotten. I know that they get the reviews, and they're also very successful, so it seems sort of counterintuitive to say that they don't get their credit.
Yeah.
But they really are strong movies. The last two or three of them have been.
I agree.
Really, especially the last one.
No diminishing returns there.
That one, I think, was that the highest grossing one, Chris?
I don't know. It should have been, because it was the best one. They really have, it's exactly the opposite of diminishing returns.
They get better.
The first two movies were absolutely laughable. They were terrible. And then they've gotten just slowly gotten better and better and better.
And they're good films, too, with good filmmakers and good talent behind it. So it's good for movies altogether when those kinds of things are popular.
You're right.
November 24th, the next week, 80s nostalgia again, Red Dawn. was this – I don't know. I have no reverence for Red Dawn. But anyway, it's coming out Thanksgiving weekend, the time that we should be thankful that we're not being invaded by Russians.
Yeah, I know. Or Nicaragua or Cuba, as the original movie was. What is the storyline of the remake? I'm just curious.
Oh, I'd have to look it up to tell you.
Well, I'm going to look it up. So.
You know, it is notable because it's Tom Cruise's son is one of the leads in it.
Really? Okay.
Well, Connor, yes.
I think this is one of those remakes that doesn't really matter that it's a remake, too. I think this could be either. I think this could be successful outside of the fact that it's a remake. It is kind of an interesting story. I have no love for Red Dawn either, but it's kind of an interesting sort of concept that hasn't really been done since Red Dawn, which is the idea of attack on American soil. You know, it's sort of a sci-fi type thing, and you know, this band of ragtags or whatever. I mean, that part of it, you know, has been done. But this whole idea of this attack on American soil doesn't really matter that it's a remake, I think. This could be really successful.
That same day, a movie called Burlesque comes out. I think this is a musical.
With Christina Aguilera,
Yeah, and the big thing is Cher. I mean, they brought back Cher. And when I say they brought back Cher, I mean like in a Ted Williams kind of way.
That's a horrible thing. Well, there goes the Cher interview for this show.
That's great. The second Chronicles of Narnia, is this the second one that comes out
in
December
10th? The third one. Because
that shows
Disney
you how much
dropped it. Or was it Disney? Or who dropped it? Because the Prince Caspian didn't do very well, and whoever owned the property at the time dropped it. I think Fox, maybe, if I'm not mistaken, Fox picked it up.
Well, that doesn't matter because the audience
is
going to drop it, too.
They may drop it because I don't know if it can really do well.
Yeah, it might be a Golden Compass kind of thing.
Yeah.
The first Narnia did really well. I don't know what the second one did, but... December 17th, Yogi Bear, they just announced the casting, or who they hope to cast, including Dan Aykroyd, who is my least favorite.
Love for the old Saturday night.
His existence is a boo-boo.
Oh, man, that's cold, man.
And also Justin Timberlake.
Timberlake.
But it has no shot, because it's going up against Tron 2, the ultimate fan movie.
That's a big deal. That's just a lot of people are very curious about that. That's also 80s nostalgia, though.
But it also plays into that similar release date this year is occupied by Avatar, which is a movie that's being heralded for its technological innovations. And they've said the same thing about Tron 2.
Mm-hmm.
The thing. When the first Tron movie came out, it was really... No one had seen anything like that as far as visuals go. So they can't do that again. They really have to up it again.
The first Tron was the first video game kind of movie.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely it was. So they really do have to up the ante again. So I'm very, like Jerry said, very curious to see what they're going to do. We haven't seen any visuals from this movie. I think it's going to be really out there, and I'm extremely curious.
Yeah, I'm excited about it.
Yeah.
Also on that day, the new Jim Brooks movie, and Jerry, you and I were talking about this. Jim Brooks.
Jack Nicholson. That's
Jack Nicholson playing a supporting role in it.
Yeah.
Surefire collaboration.
Yeah,
like
I mean, you can't beat that. You really can't beat that track record.
And both go arounds between Jack Nicholson and Jim Brooks. And I say this again, not discounting Broadcast News, which was a cameo, resulted in Oscars for Nicholson.
Yeah.
So I have high hopes for any new James Brooks movie. I mean, he's made some duds, but when he hits it right, man, they're movies that live on. Yeah.
Okay.
Now this Christmas we have Sherlock Holmes. Next Christmas on December 22nd, 2010, we have Green Hornet.
Now that's a Michel Gondry film, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. You have two very hip directors. With two very different styles, bringing two very, well, Sherlock Holmes is a much older property than Green Hornet, but Green Hornet seems to have gone through a lot of different people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I have a much, you know, more optimistic view of Sherlock Holmes than the both of you, I don't know what to make of Green Hornet.
I feel the same way about Green Hornet as I do about Sherlock Holmes. No, I think it's the only wild card, in my opinion, is Michel Gondry. That he's the if it's anybody else, I think that this is a disaster. I just don't. Mm-hmm. I think it's the spirit. I think it's one of these Hollywood Christmas movies that just sort of Christmas action movie that nobody is really that interested in seeing. I mean, I personally am not that interested in seeing a Green Hornet movie. I don't care if it's Seth Rogen or anybody. Like, I just don't. You're really going to have to sell me on this movie. And I'm the core audience that they go for. You know, I'm a young male.
Right.
That's who they're going for, and they're going to have to sell me. It's not like some of these other movies that it's something that I care about where they don't really have to sell me. I'm going to see it either way. You know, G.I. Joe or Transformers has that kind of audience. It doesn't matter. They're there. There's not a lot of people who have this great love for Green Hornet. It's kind of a niche audience, you know.
What do you remember about the original Green Hornet?
Bruce Lee.
That's it. That's the thing.
That's
if it wasn't for
exactly.
Bruce Lee, we would not be talking about this.
That's exactly my point. I agree 100%. So you have to build excitement based on something else. And it's definitely not going to be Michel Gondry. He might give it a chance of being a good movie, but he's not going to give it a chance of building excitement.
Yeah.
And neither is Seth Rogen because he's not an action star.
No,
you've got to build excitement somehow.
Who is playing the Bruce Lee character?
Kato. Isn't it Cameron Diaz?
You know, I knew you would go there, but no, really, who is playing the...
Oh, I was being serious.
If it's Cameron Diaz, we're in deep shit. No, I like Cameron Diaz a lot. I think she's a good actress, but I don't think that's what... No.
It was going to be Stephen Chow, and then Stephen Chow backed out, and now it's some other...
Jay Chow. It's Jay Chow. That's what it says here on IMDb, Jay Chow.
Okay, so it's some
that's an unknown. It really rests on that performance, I think, because that's what we remember about the original Green Hornet is Bruce Lee.
They're keeping it in the Chow family, which I think
but
is good.
Did you see who else is in the movie, though?
Yeah, Christoph Waltz.
So you got some stuff to work with there.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be, but Chris brings up a really great point, the spirit. That holds a really negative view. That goes for Sherlock Holmes, too. Even though Sherlock Holmes is an older property, it's still that kind of vibe, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, the last movie I wanted to talk about, Dahmer versus Gacy. Now, the only reason why I bring this up, because I saw the title and I was, what? I think this is a movie that will be sold on its title. It's a cheapo horror film, exploitative. That's really kind of. It seems beside the point to say it's in bad taste, but because the movie is made to be in bad taste, but it's really offensive, isn't it? It's about a secret government lab. They clone all these serial killers and they go on these mass rampages, and essentially it's like the real life Freddy versus Jason with Dahmer versus Gacy.
Yeah, it is offensive, and it's likely going to be the kind of movie that we will hear about again, just because people will be offended by it, and rightfully so. But it's not going to be the kind of thing that we're ever going to see, certainly not in a movie theater. We'll very likely not even see it in our local video store.
Yeah.
Again, not because it's not on the shelf, but because the shelf doesn't exist, because our local video store won't exist.
Right.
It's a catch 22, though. It's a catch 22 because it's offensive because this kind of treatment of them as cult figures and icons and heroes, it's offensive to the families of the victims. But it's one of those things where the families of the victims speak out, then that movie has a lot more publicity and a vibe for sick people to want to go see.
Right. But what about all those films that came out in the early part of this decade? Gacy, Dahmer, those sort of things. Those all went straight to video.
And Dahmer was good.
Dahmer was good. And even Gacy, while it was not good, it was attempting to just sort of tell the story straight. It wasn't
trying to
make them into some sort of iconic character that is, battling another character or something. And this is just, Jamie's right. To say bad taste doesn't give it enough, doesn't have the weight that it really should.
Yeah, I agree.
It's beyond bad taste. It's really, really an awful idea. And it will rightfully not be seen by anybody, most likely. So.
Okay.
I didn't
even know of it before you mentioned it, Jamie. So.
I didn't.
I'm my own worst enemy, because here I am talking about, the more they talk about it, the more people will know about it. And So that's what I'm doing. Okay, movie song of the week. I'm going to let you guys choose. Should we go mainstream or obscure?
Obscure.
Obscure.
Okay, then we'll go obscure. Thank you, guys. It's a lot of fun when all three of us get together.
It is.
Yes, it is.
And thank you so much, Chris. Are you? Especially when we act like parrots.
Yeah.
So let's get together soon. Golden Globe knobs.
Well, wait, isn't that in December?
You can tell where my head is at.
Yeah.
Oh, I gotta announce. Next week, Boogie Nights. The new classics, but we're also doubling up the new classics because the week after that is Sunday, November 22nd, and that's notable because it's the 46th anniversary of the Kennedy assassination on that day.
Mm-hmm.
So that's too good. That sounds so disrespectful. That's an occasion. It's too good to pass up.
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing a show on JFK that day, and when people talk about the technological achievements of JFK, Jerry, what do they always talk about?
The editing.
Yeah, we have the editor of JFK on
with us.
That's
awesome.
On the 22nd, Joe Hutching, and we'll have a great time talking about that. And Chris, you're welcome to join in as one of the movie geeks on either one of those.
Yeah, on both of those, I hope.
Well, I'm nuts about both of those movies, so I
hope.
All right, mystery song of the week. Last week was Sign of the Times, Prince. This week is something completely different. You might be able to point out the vocalist, because nobody sounds like this gentleman. but the film is a little obscure. Gentlemen, thank you so much, man. I'll see you guys next week.
All right, see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I like my town with a little drop of poison. Nobody knows they're lining up to go insane. I'm all alone. I smoke my friends down to the filter, but I feel much cleaner after it rains. She left in the fall, that's a picture on the wall. She always had that little drop of poison. She left in the fall, that's a picture on the wall. She always had that little drop of poison. Thank you.
someone said, you'll never get a wish from a bone. Another wrong goodbye.